Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. People Magazine and the Des Moines Register say that Iowa bike mechanic Jerry Jackson has a rare genetic disease. There have been 7 generations of blindness in Jerry's family. The disease is called autosomal dominant neovascular inflammatory vitreoretinopathy, or ADNIV. Blinding eye disease specialists at the University of Iowa say that ADNIV is characterized by pigmentary retinal degeneration, retinal detachment, and blindness. People Magazine reports that ADNIV has affected 84 living and deceased members of Jerry Jackson's family over the past 4 decades. Jerry joins us to talk about his family's 7 generations and experiences having ADNIV and how he's spoken out to live a full life despite having the disease. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian.
So we want to learn more about ADNIV. What's ADNIV exactly?
Well, it is a swelling of the retina, which stops the blood flow in the retina, and then it creates small blood vessels that have like a clump of grapes at the end of it, and that is a weak point that causes hemorrhaging.
Okay. How did you first learn about the disease? And also the New York Daily News, I heard, mentioned that you were a carrier of the disease. Is yes. that true?
Yes. Each generation has somebody that passes it on. Not everybody gets the eye disease in each family. I have a sister that does not have it. And it just does not have a pattern of how it works. It could be 6 kids and 2 get it. I know one family that has 4 children, and all 4 children have it.
So how were you and the rest of your family diagnosed with the disease?
Back in 67, I started having some problems with it, and I went to a local eye specialist, and he told me he didn't understand what was going on there, so he sent me to the University of Iowa, and I went up there. They had never seen anything like it, and so they started doing laser right away because of the hemorrhaging. They thought I might lose the complete eye if they didn't stop it.
Speaking of doctors, Dr. James Fulk, who is he, and how did he help you and help diagnose and treat your family members with ADNIV?
Yeah, when I first started going to the university, I had 2 other doctors that had been there for a while and then had moved on, and Dr. Fulk ended up being my specialist for the retina, and he was using, like I say, the laser. They didn't have any other treatment at that time, and then over a period of time, they had done enough laser treatment. It kind of damaged the eye of scarring and one thing or another enough that I couldn't see, but they did save the eye. But and the retina, the disease just kind of takes its toll on it, and it the cells in the eye finally die. But with the girls, now they've come up with a lot of new technology of implants of steroid chips, which last for 3 years. They used to take shots every 3 months, so they tried something new. And the girls are up to using any new technology if it'll help somebody else.
The Des Moines Register said that your daughter, Shauna, ignored the chance of going blind while she was growing up. When she was between the ages of 9 and 13, she had regular eye tests, and the doctor said that she was unlikely to get ADNIV. But in 2005, when she turned 24, she started having blurry vision in her right eye. And she went to the local Walmart and had the eye doctor there check it out. The eye doctor at the Walmart found inflammation in that eye and sent her to Dr. Folk. I mean, what was going through her mind when she found out she had AD and IV?
Yes, she was very upset that this is a possibility. At this point, she knew that people with ADNIB probably was going to go blind. And one of her concerns was that she would not be able to see her daughter walk down the aisle being married, you know. And she just didn't know how she was going to deal with that. And so it was, she was very concerned and kind of went through some depression of losing your eyesight, and you're able to, you know, you kind of have a disability or a handicap. And so she has overcome that since then, and just takes one day at a time.
When your other daughter, Shannon, learned that her sister suffered from blurry vision, Shannon decided to get checked for the disease, too. So in 2007, at 37 years old, Shannon was diagnosed with AD and IV. So what was going through her mind when she found out she had the disease?
Yes, she had the same problem of knowing that she's probably going to go blind, and it was very difficult for her, and they just tried new technology, hoping for to keep what sight they had, and started using cane travel and one thing or another.
It's been very difficult for your daughters, I understand, because they lost their jobs due to their vision loss, and they're both now on disability, and within the last few years, they've lost their driving privileges. What have your daughters done to speak out about having the disease and overcome their current obstacles to live life to the fullest, the best they can?
Yeah, I've, you know, discussed with them that you just got to keep active, you just keep trying for training. They went up to the Des Moines here to the Blind Center and have learned how to do a lot of traveling, cooking, and both of them have got jobs now and feel good about themselves. If the blindness is not going to get them down.
Good for them. And what do you tell your other, do you give your other family members, like your grandchildren, the same advice too?
Yes, and this is a very possibility that, you know, they could get it. And in fact, the one granddaughter has found that she has a gene. And they understand that, you know, that I've been able to overcome it, and still being able to work. I'm not ready to retire or anything, but yeah, they see there is hope that there's training in your state blind centers, and there is, you know, like I say, hope for people to keep working on that.
Okay. The Des Moines Register, Jerry, says that you've lived your life to the fullest as a blind person. You're a bicycle mechanic in your family's hometown of Burlington, Iowa. How did you become a bicycle mechanic, and how did you speak out about your ability to do that job?
Well, I'd worked about 20 years at a furniture factory, and I was losing my sight at that point, and the Department of Blind Center up here at Des Moines was giving me special tools to work on boring machines and table saws and a mortise machine, and then this business went and folded, and so there was about 2 years there I didn't have a job, and so then I had went to a bicycle shop, and I'd known the guy that run it, and I told him I was looking for a job, and he thought maybe I could maybe work there and do some of these things. So the job partnership that was a government program a few years ago that would pay half my wages for 18 weeks for the training. And so I started to work there, and I told him, I said, you know, if there's a problem here that I'm not going to be able to do this or something, I said, you know, I'll just quit and there would be no hard feelings. And so I went through the training, and I've been there for 24 years in August.
Great. Now, I also understand from talking to you the other day that you work at a grocery store, correct?
Yes, it's a local Hy-Vee branch. It's over several states here. And they have a little plastic sleeve on the shelves which tells the item and the price and everything, and they bring up about 1,000 of them a week to me that when they have their weekly ads, and I pull the old price and stuff out and sent back down to the scanning department to reload, and then they have a lot of coupons, and I have to count them, and it's sent to accounting department to ship back to the vendors.
Oh, cool.
And and I do other cleaning and one thing or another in the break room there, tables and stuff, so I keep busy.
That's great.
And in addition to answering the phones and directing the calls to the different departments.
In addition to scanning and cycling, you are an avid cyclist. You've pedaled tandem bicycle races across Iowa during a special event. It's called the Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across America. Tell us more about the event and how our listeners can join along for the ride.
Okay. I've done what they call Rag Ride, ride across Iowa. And it's usually around 450 miles. And when you start out, you dip the rear tire of your bike in the Missouri River. And then it's somewhere 60 to 90 miles a day across Iowa. And then you stay at towns on the way each night. And you register usually in February is when they give the route that you'll be taking. It could be the north, central, or the southern part of the state. And when you get to the other end of the state, you dip your front bike tire in the Mississippi River that you finished the ride.
You continue to also take a weekly dinner ride with the Bike Burlington Bicycle Club. In fact, from talking to your wife, by email, I learned that you ride some of the members of that club, work with you at the bike shop. What's that ride exactly?
Yeah, about every Wednesday night through the summer, we ride anywhere from 22 to 40 miles a night, and then we get to a restaurant, and everybody eats, and then they load the bikes up and bring us back to town to where we travel back to our home. And then I have a captain that helps me Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If the weather's permitting, we ride at 5 o'clock in the morning out 15 miles and then come back, which takes us about an hour. And we try to ride through the summer and even through the winter if conditions are possible. If the streets are dry, and we usually ride until down to about 10 above zero.
How have you spoken out about your ability to ride a bicycle despite losing vision?
Well, I started with at work. When I started to work at Bickles, they had a tandem there for sale, and I bought one, and then I kept asking people to be my captain on the bike, and there was some people that stepped up to help me out there and done several bike rides, and since then I've got three people that ride with me all the time. They kind of take different Wednesday nights to ride with me and really enjoy it, and we have rode some other organized bike rides around the area here. I've done a 60-mile bike ride here about 2 weeks ago, one morning we started out there, and usually around Rag Bright time, they have some organized rides. It's 60 to 80 mile rides to kind of prepare for Rag Bright.
Our next question comes from Chris Nussbaum of Maryland. He sent us another question previously on the show, but today's question he sends us is for you to answer. He wants to know, do you believe your family's prior experience with blindness has made your adjustment to blindness an easier process? If so, how?
Yeah, it's made me a stronger person to, you know, learn how to deal with this. I have learned cane travel. I walk from, which is about 5 blocks, isn't too far, but I've learned how to travel on my own, and, you know, I just don't give up, and I enjoy the bike riding, and we have a church ministry here. We fix bikes up for people to donate to them that don't have any transportation, and I just find that it's just a normal day that we do things around here, and the girls are finding that out too, that it isn't the end of the world.
I understand that the University of Iowa in Iowa City is working with you, your family, and Dr. Folk to research AD&IV and develop and on the developments of the disease and even treatments for a possible cure. Why don't you share some of the current and upcoming research and treatments with the audience here?
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to say the girls have had implants of steroids that keep the inflammation down in the retina, which helps keep their sight longer. And, you know, and if there's any new technology comes up, they would be first to try it out to, you know, be able to help somebody else. And they have said that there's a possibility that they can do an implant behind the retina that would maybe stop this eye disease that they think is in the future. Pretty near, maybe even, and possibly in the near future that they can implant a chip in the brain itself to bypass the eye. It would be kind of like an artificial retina that, with a lens, that we would be able to get vision, and that's something they think is pretty near in the future. And also, I know in California they. A college developed a car that went from point A to point B, which was several miles, and there was no person in the vehicle, and it made it from point A to point B without any accidents or anything, and I think that is something in the future also, that there will be vehicles that will have technology to get it for blind people.
So when and where will some of the treatments future treatments for AD&IV be available?
I think that the University of Iowa up here is one of the best and central located for this eye disease and for a lot of others. And this eye disease is a lot of other eye diseases all thrown into one here that we have. And if they can control what we have, I think it will help a lot of others.
Let's talk about the disease's impact on your grandkids. The New York Daily News says that there's a 50-50 chance that your grandkids are going to get AD&IV, but not all of them want to find out if they have the gene. Why is this the case?
Well, the middle grandson, he said that he does not want to know at this point. He hasn't any problems, and he just does not want to know. If he gets any inflammation problems, sight or whatever, and he just doesn't want to know. The youngest grandson, he just went up and got tested, but he hasn't got any results back from the test. And then the oldest granddaughter, she has went up and found out she does have the gene. And she said, you know, she just take one day at a time, and if she starts having problems, she'll start going up to the university.
How can our listeners find out more information about and even get diagnosed, if they need to, with AD and IV? Get checked out.
Yeah. I would say to contact the University of Iowa so they can contact their local doctors to make sure that they know how to diagnose this problem, because I do have a first cousin that was misdiagnosed over around Chicago, and they let him get to the point that he started hemorrhaging. And so with some of our family members found out about it, and overnight was able to contact Dr. Mahajan, which does the large part of this research up in Iowa City, was able to get him in the next morning. And my first cousin said when they went in there, they got there early, and they took him right in and gave him first-class diagnosis and checked him out there and started giving injections of steroids, which has helped bring back a little bit of his sight there.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, you know, blindness is, you know, something that's just kind of difficult to deal with at first. But, you know, I'm just thankful that that's the only thing I've got wrong at this point in my life at 68 years old. I just don't even think about each day, you know, being blind. I just have a routine I do and get around to go to work, at bike ride and everything. You know, it's just not really much of a handicap in a way. And I know my wife helps me out a lot in ways there, but a person's got to be careful if they just don't give somebody else too many things to do and you lose your ability to do those on your own.
Jerry, we hope that you and your family continue to live healthy and happy lives. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out.
With the tagline of, you don't need sight to cook dinner tonight, cooking in the dark will leave your mouth watering. Host Dale and Cheryl serve up a plethora of tasty treats and delectable dishes topped off with a healthy garnish of humor on a weekly basis. To view the complete archive of Cooking in the Dark programs, please visit www.cookinginthedark.libsyn.com. We leave you with a montage of prior Cooking in the Dark episodes.
Welcome to Cooking in the Dark. This is Cheryl Cummings, and I'm going to introduce to you the man who proves to us every week that you don't need sight to cook dinner tonight, Dale Campbell.
Man, hidey-ho. We're going to have to get something up to keep these rambunctious people out of the kitchen. We're going to start off with the honey chicken wings. Let's turn our attention to this delicious 21st century macaroni and cheese. Salmon croquettes. I'm also going to tell you how to make either a killer red sauce or a very delicious herb tartar.
Join Dale Campbell and Cheryl Cummings for Cooking in the Dark. Cooking in the Dark is heard Saturdays on ACB Radio Mainstream at 10 p.m. Eastern, repeating every 2 hours through Sunday.